Are we in a tech stock bubble? The Nasdaq is up 22% since January, and the S&P 500 index is up more than 17% over the last 7 months. Both indices have been powered upwards by tech stocks like Nvidia, Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, and Meta. We've seen tech stock bubbles before, most notably in the early 2000s. But what are we to make of Nvidia riding the AI wave, trading at a price-earnings multiple of about 70? Investors are betting big on Nvidia and AI and what this means for the future of tech. So it's a fair question to ask whether we are staring at a bubble and what can we learn from previous booms and busts in the tech sector. And this can guide us perhaps in making better decisions about the future. We're joined now by Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth, to look at this in more detail. Hi, Adrian. Good to talk to you again. Can you help us unpack this a little bit? Is this tech sector in a bubble, and why is the technology space apparently so uncertain?
Hi, Kieran, and hello to everybody listening in. Our feeling is the answer is unfortunately yes. We are definitely somewhere in the stage of a bubble. And unfortunately with these things is as the valuations grow into that bubble, things seem to go on forever. But eventually things do end and trees don't grow forever. And I think the reason why we see these technology bubbles form is partly to do with the fact that it's actually quite uncertain. So there's very little that informed investors can actually concretely use as an accurate estimate of what the future might hold. And these often big ideas tend to capture our imaginations, and we see a lot of marketing out there in terms of what can be done, how exciting the technology is, and people seem to get wrapped up in that to a large extent. But if you think about it, I think very few people actually critically understand what AI is really about, other than some of the more fundamental or elementary concepts around it. And there's a lot of big ideas being formed. And the uncertainty then comes in around, but there's actually quite a wide range of impacts here. And investors tend to immediately fixate on the potential for growth and efficiency and get excited and overexcited about the level of profits that could be made without understanding what the first, second, and third round effects could be. How does it fundamentally change consumer behavior across different sectors? There's definitely questions around labor productivity. What is the short, medium, and long-term impact on profit margins, for example? And even what type of risks can we see being introduced from this new technology? And I think that's especially true in the AI space. So a lot of uncertainty around it, but it seems always the case that investors seem to latch on to the more positive elements of this uncertainty and extrapolate very good recent past performance into the future and then continue to build that bubble out as the years progress. And I think, as you mentioned, the valuations to our mind seem overly rich at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Nvidia at a price earnings multiple of around 70, probably a little bit less than that at the moment. It seems extraordinary that people are betting so big on this, and it's really going to have to deliver earnings growth into the future, which is way beyond what most people would expect is sustainable. Maybe explain how these bubbles form in the tech space, because we have seen this before, and it looks like it's coming around the corner again.
Yes, agreed. I think they tend to form largely because people are not really differentiating between the technology and the valuations. So what we're saying is this is not a temporary technology or insignificant technology per se. It could be a very meaningful technology. But where the bubble part comes in is in the market itself. So it's not a tech bubble, but a tech market bubble. So it's very possible to have very important and profound growth in the area of technology that changes the way that we behave as consumers. And you mentioned this briefly in your introduction with the introduction of internet, for example, in the dot-com bubble. It was indeed probably even more influential in the subsequent decades than what people actually at first believed. The problem is that the valuations were still overly rich. And that's because people look at this on a first round effect basis and go into the immediate beneficiaries first, without thinking about the second and third order beneficiaries, which we think is where the real value sits. So if you go to the internet example, investors were piling into things like Cisco and Microsoft, largely the, either the infrastructure or the software around the internet and computing, as well as the dot-com companies specifically. But actually, the biggest beneficiaries were the guys that could harness the power of the internet into their business models. And you can think today those businesses are the Metas and the Googles of the world that managed to, over that period, introduce it into their businesses. A lot of the consumer-focused businesses with online shopping and similar. So I think it's really important to think through how this could impact the world. And I think, unfortunately, we also have to recognize that we don't have a perfect view of what the future might hold over the next decade or two as we see this technology being introduced. So you have to an extent, contain your exuberance and focus into areas where you have more certainty. It's not a guessing game as to how much money can be made. You've got to have, when you're starting to work with capital, you have to have a fair degree of certainty that profits will be sustained in areas. And that's where the component of margin of safety also comes in, because we think many of these companies are, and NVIDIA specifically, is priced for perfection. If you look at what the market consensus is around long-term sustainable growth, it's in the 30 percentages, which is way too high. The natural way of things is just eventually things are regulated. Eventually other competitors do enter. And there's no company that is completely exempt from either competition or regulatory scrutiny. And those things haven't been factored into the pricing yet at all. Only the growth is being considered. And even that growth is assumed to sustain itself over infinite time. So it's not like investors are saying that we will see phenomenal growth over the next 5 years. Investors are saying this story is going to essentially grow at a rapid pace indefinitely. And that's a scary concept. That wouldn't be our assessment of what reality is going to be. And again, I mean, you mentioned the dot-com bubble, but we've seen this in so many examples before, which is the interesting part. And I think that's where your comment around looking at history is so valuable, because when we've seen other technologies being rolled out, we saw similar bubbles form in the markets. So if we think back to, you know, the introductions of telephone lines, electricity, vehicles, or even more recently, although fairly back in history, the 1960s with colored TVs and VCRs. And we think back about businesses like Blockbuster Video, for example, and those sort of companies. Then we had this introduction of cell phones, and we had Ericsson and Nokia, the internet examples we've mentioned. So we have seen multiple examples of this happen. But inevitably, investors say what we think is some of the most dangerous words that you can say is this time is different. Mm-hmm. We don't think this time is different. We think this time is going to be almost exactly the same. We're going to have very powerful technology that will change consumer behavior and make people more profitable. But investors do tend to get overexcited on a valuation basis and sacrifice all margin of safety and price stocks for perfection. And the world just isn't perfect. So we hang on and see what's going to happen and where the cracks are going to start to form. But to my mind, I agree that the valuations are just too stretched for safe investing.
Yeah, it does seem extraordinary that NVIDIA has risen to become the world's most valuable company, and everybody seems to be mesmerized by AI at the moment. And that certainly seems to be driving the other tech stock prices as well. So the question I have for you is, how do investors navigate a period like this with so many uncertainties and potential cracks that could appear, that, like you've mentioned?
Yeah, I think the key would be to distinguish narrative from number, especially when it comes to technology, because as I mentioned, it tends to capture the imagination. People get quite excited about that. And that sense of excitement is normally not a good thing when you're investing. So I think what makes this especially relevant right now is we've got a very dangerous combination of very loose monetary situation combined with a very interesting and exciting technology. So that means that investors do have money to speculate at the moment, and there is excess capital being floating around in the global economy. And that that excess is finding its way into this AI story. And that's why we think it's so dangerous. So I think just acknowledging that, yes, it is an exciting story, which means that there is a higher likelihood that things are probably getting ahead of itself, is already quite useful. And I think also just realize that there's more to be done in terms of research, and much of what we need to perform an accurate assessment of what a true valuation is for some of these businesses is simply just not available. So that means you're being pushed to venture into areas that are largely unknown, and that introduces risk, which is the other thing that we need to keep in mind. And unfortunately, what we see with these things is people also obviously look at past returns, which is the other very dangerous thing in markets, is when you look at stocks that have grown tenfold and you feel like you're missing out and there's still a good narrative around the story. You think, maybe I haven't missed out. Maybe there is still some upside. Maybe I can be the investor that generates 10 times my investment. So I think just be aware of the risks at the moment. And also don't feel pressured into things that entice you like this. There's many good investments available at the moment across different asset classes that are offering fantastic returns. It's hardly necessary for people actually to assume the amount of risk that's currently being assumed out there.
You mentioned earlier that people tend to get carried away with exuberance when we get these waves of technology that come at us. But are there ways that we can improve the outcomes as an investor and avoid these bubbles and detect them early enough so that we can avoid them?
Yeah, I think that the key is to get very practical. So in the absence of any technical research being available in terms of, is it a tried and tested business model, and what are the returns going to be over the next 10 years? You almost need to think of it from the other side and work in reverse. So you almost have to go back and say, well, given the valuation on the table, how much growth is being priced in here? And look at that. And next to that, ask then, how likely is the company to generate that growth for what kind of period? And if you do that from that perspective, you quickly start to see that although the growth rates might look good, the market is actually assuming quite a lofty growth number for these businesses. So I think just getting really practical and understanding what the numbers actually say from a valuation perspective and whether you think that is in touch with reality will already help. I don't think investors are applying their minds as to what valuations are actually telling us. It's not just about, for example, seeing it's a 70 PE. It's about understanding what does a 70 PE, for example, imply. I remember when I started out in my career, and it still remains one of the better rule of thumbs, is that I was told that if you look at the PE of a business, that's generally what the market is assuming as the long-term growth rate of the business. So if you're buying a auto business, for example, which is hated by the markets at the moment at a PE of 5, the market is only assuming roughly a 5% growth rate into perpetuity, which is very low. But if they generate 6, 7, or 8%, then you're in the money, because then investors will be surprised and obviously the stock will re-rate and trade higher. But if you think about a business like NVIDIA and it's trading at a 70 PE, its 70% growth rate is quite steep. And if you put a 70% growth rate down for the next 10 years and you look at that figure and you see what that actually says, is that essentially the market cap of NVIDIA is going to be bigger than in some countries. So, is that realistic? And I remember a similar case with Tesla, for example. We spent some time with one of the other asset managers in the industry as a co-partner in investments. And that we were talking about Tesla and they approached us from a similar way. And the Tesla valuation at the time was essentially implying that from a batteries perspective, is that Tesla will be the only manufacturer of batteries worldwide if these valuations are warranted, which obviously doesn't make sense. And as simple as what that is, it's helpful to think about it in practical terms when we look at these valuations. I think the other thing is that we need to acknowledge that, as I alluded to, remember that number where we often see in the media where most investors in South Africa, more than 90%, won't have sufficient retirement savings once they're in retirement. They just haven't saved enough. Can investors in South Africa really afford to speculate on things like Nvidia as the next big thing? And it's not like we're deprived for opportunities either. There's many great businesses there that's generating 10% earnings growth, dividend yields of high single digits, very strong balance sheets, very strong tested business models, that you much safer investment that can still get you to your goal. It's not necessary to be enticed and drawn into some of these more speculative things that could end very badly.
Adrian Pask, CIO, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Adrian, for that.
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks to the guys listening in as well. Hope you find it insightful.